Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 17, text 20. The Descent of the River Ganges, chapter title. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. For persons with impure vision, the Supreme Lord's eyes appear like those of someone who indiscriminately drinks intoxicating beverages. Thus bewildered, such unintelligent persons become angry at the Supreme Lord. And due to their angry mood, the Lord Himself appears angry and very fearful. However, this is an illusion. When the wives of the serpent demon were agitated by the touch of the Lord's lotus feet, due to shyness, they could proceed no further in their worship of Him. Yet the Lord remained unagitated by their touch, for He is equipoised in all circumstances. Therefore, who will not worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Purport. Anyone who remains unagitated, even in the presence of cause for agitation, is called dhira, or equipoised. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being always in a transcendental position, is never agitated by anything. Therefore, someone who wants to become dhira must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 2.13, Krishna says, Dhiras tatra namuyati. A person who is equipoised in all circumstances is never bewildered. Prahlad Maharaj is a perfect example of a dhira. When the fierce form of Nrisimhadeva appeared in order to kill Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad was unagitated. He remained calm and quiet. Whereas others, including Lord Brahma, were agitated by the features of the Lord. Om Anjanatimirandasya Gananjana Shadakaya Chakshuranmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangam Lange Tegrim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vancha Kalpa Trubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha, Titanam Pavanibhyo, Vaishnavibhyo, Namo Namaha. In this verse, Lord Shiva is continuing to offer his prayers to Lord Shankarshan, Lord Vishnu or Krishna. So here he says, Asadrisho Yapatibhati Mayaya. Shibheva Madhvasava Tamra Lochana Nagavad Bhavarhana Ishireriya Hipadios Parshana Darshitindriya. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. For persons with impure vision, Supreme Lord's eyes appear like those of someone who indiscriminately drinks intoxicating beverages. Thus bewildered, such unintelligent persons become angry at the Supreme Lord. And due to their angry mood, the Lord Himself appears angry and very fearful. However, this is an illusion. When the wives of the serpent demon were agitated by the touch of the Lord's lotus feet, due to shyness, they could proceed no further in their worship of Him. Yet the Lord remained unagitated by their touch, for He is equipoised in all circumstances. Therefore, who will not worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead? When an ordinary person hears descriptions of the transcendental form of the Lord, he may become disturbed when he reads shlokas that describe the Lord's eyes appearing as if they're rolling in intoxication. His eyes appear to be rolling in intoxication and red in color, just like a drunken man or an intoxicated man. So they become indignant. Ordinary person, he becomes indignant. What is this? What is God is intoxicated? His eyes are red. My eyes become red when I'm intoxicated or I don't sleep enough. So he's thinking the Lord is like me. He's also just like me getting intoxicated. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he says that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. We have this expression, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. In other words, what you consider beautiful, I may not consider beautiful. Once Srila Prabhupada, he was drinking water in the way he would drink his water, holding his cup, and he would put his finger out like this. He would always hold his pinky finger out like this, in a very aristocratic way. Royal, aristocratic way. Unique. A flair. With his finger out like this. So one of the devotees, I think it was Govinda Dasi, she remarked to Prabhupada, she said, Prabhupada, everything you do is so wonderful. For example, the way, because in those days, devotees were very close and personal, familiar with Prabhupada, they could speak very openly like this. Prabhupada, everything you do is so wonderful. Just the way you're holding your cup and drinking your water, it's so beautiful and attractive to us. And Prabhupada said, yes, because you love me. If you love someone, everything they do will be attractive to you. If you love them. When they speak, when they walk, when they sit, when they sing, when they dress, when they move, anything they do, when they eat, any action of that person who you behold in your heart, who you love, when you see them, you'll be happy. You'll be joyful. But if you're envious of someone, if you're envious of them, and you hate them, and you don't like them, when you see them, you will find so much fault. Oh, look at the way he walks. He walks like a duck. Look at the way he sings. No, he sings like a frog. He sounds like a frog. Off key, and it's just terrible. I can't stand it. I always come into class after he sings the Jaya Radha Madhava. Because I can't stand it. And in this way, and have you ever seen him eat? He's like a monkey. He's with both hands, just like a monkey on the fence. And in this way, you'll find so much fault with that person. Of course, there may be faults, but needless to say, the idea is that because you're envious of that person, you can't see anything good. And you become disturbed by their very character or their physical appearance. So beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Whereas someone else who loves that person, he thinks, oh, this person's very beautiful, he's very nice, everything he does is aristocratic and wonderful. Just like Srila Prabhupada's devotees, they loved him, and they saw everything he did as beautiful. His face was a beautiful lotus face. His movements were swan-like, Paramahamsa. Everything about him was exalted and divine and transcendental. Everything was extraordinary. And we were always beholding him with great awe and amazement and fascination and love and attraction. But the outsiders, the non-devotees, the envious people, they would find so much fault with Prabhupada. And we would have to endure this sometimes. The preachers have to endure this in Sankirtan. They hear so many envious statements. But Krishna protects. So in the same way, a person who does not love Krishna, person who is envious of Krishna, or does not consider Krishna beautiful, then he will find fault with the characteristics of Krishna, with the behavior. What is this? Krishna is dancing with other people's wives in the middle of night? This is your God? What kind of God is this? This is the height of immorality. This is indecent. This is reprehensible. This is the most sinful thing. And you're worshipping this Rasa Panchadiya like the highest thing. There's five chapters of the Rasa you're holding on your head and worshipping this. But this they find irreprehensible. Because they don't have the conception of love for Krishna. And in the same way as Lord Shiva is mentioning, that when people hear descriptions of his beloved Lord Sankarshan, Sankarshan is Baladev. Baladev expands himself in the Chaturvyuha. And one form is Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. And that Sankarshan is the Ishtadev of Mahadev. Mahadev is the greatest among the gods. Mahadev, Lord Shiva, Swayambhur. Swayambhur, what's it, the verse explains, he's one of the Mahajans, he's Mahajan. Swayambhur Narada Shambhu. Shambhu is Lord Shiva. So he is worshipping Baladev in Baladev's form as Sankarshan. So Sankarshan's eyes are described as ruddy or ruddy red. They're this beautiful red. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he explains in his purports to other verses that Krishna's eyes are like lotus petal. If you look at a lotus petal, of a pink lotus flower. On the very tips of that lotus flower, the flower itself, the petal is pink, and on the tips it is very red. It is much darker shade of pink. It is like a red. And it's very, very attractive and beautiful. So the shape of Krishna's eyes, they're very, like, opulent, and they're very long. The eyes are elongated, and they're like lotus shape, like a petal. But the tips inside are like that red color, just like the tips of a lotus petal. So this is such a beautiful accent. If the lotus flower was only pink, with no red on the tip, it would not be so attractive. It's called an accent of beauty. It increases or enhances the beauty of the lotus petal. So in the same way, the red in Krishna's eyes, or Sankarshan's eyes, it accents or increases the beauty of his eyes and make them look even more attractive. So for devotees, they find this as another wonderful feature of their Lord. Another wonderful feature to meditate. The beautiful eyes of the Lord, how attractive they are. So this is Lord Shiva's glorifying his Lord. He said, this is an embellishment. This is a beautiful thing of the Lord. But the non-devotees, they criticize. And then he gives more glorification because these are his prayers. He wants to glorify his Lord. So verse after verse, including this one, Lord Shiva is glorifying and worshiping his Lord with selected words. So then he says, during the Kaliya pastime in Vrindavan, when you were dancing on the hoods, the 100 hoods of the serpent Kaliya, and you were enjoying a wonderful ras there, and rather than the stage being the banks of the Yamuna, at Yamunapulin or somewhere at Govardhan and Chandrasrovara, instead of the Rasastali being there, the Rasastali was the heads of the Kaliya serpent. And you were dancing there. And you were very excited and enjoying wonderfully there in that Rasastali. Because ordinarily the Rasastali or the Rasmandala, it stays in one place. It has a fixed location. It doesn't rise and fall and tilt one side to the other and spin around and move. So its location is fixed. But the Rasastali of the 100 heads of Kaliya was very exciting to dance on. Because sometimes the Rasastali would come up. Imagine if you were dancing on a floor in some place, like in the temple, and all of a sudden the floor rose up 5 feet, and then it came down, and then it turned like this, and then like that. Everybody would be either running for safety or laughing or something. It would be quite an amazing thing to try to keep your balance and maintain your dancing while the floor is going up and down and going around like this and spinning. So this was what was happening with the Rasamandala of the hoods of Kaliya's serpent. There were 100 Rasamandalas there, the 100 hoods of a serpent, Kaliya. And Krishna was dancing from one to the other, 1 foot on one Rasamandala, one head, and then the other head. And he was enjoying like anything. So much pleasure. But Krishna's pleasure was spelling death for Kaliya. Or at least, it was spelling purification, because he was suffering greatly. He was strangling and suffocating and being driven down by the heavy weight of Krishna. And he was vomiting. So much fire and so much refuse and garbage from within him. And that garbage was simply the collected prarabdha karma from so many births. It was all the garbage of his sins, the garbage of lust and anger and greed and envy. And this is all coming out in a hot fire. Just as we feel the fire of lust, as Krishna says when Arjuna asked him, what is it that drives men to sin? What forces people to sin? And he said it is a fire of lust and anger. He said, kam and krodh, kamesha krodesha, rajaguna samudbhavaha. He said that kam and krodh, they burn like fire in the heart. They're like a fire. They're burning the heart. So this was symbolized, this fire of lust and greed within the heart of the living entity was symbolized by Kaliya. So when Krishna, with the touch of Krishna's feet, by the touch of Krishna consciousness, he was vomiting all this fire of lust and greed. It was coming out from fire and the pollution from his heart was coming out his mouth. But when his wives, the Kaliya Patnis, the Naga Patnis, when they perceived the distress of their husband, they thought he was being finished. He was being annihilated. So therefore they began to worship Krishna. They began to worship him with so many articles. And that's what's being described here by Lord Shiva. The word arhane means archan. Archan means worship. They started worshipping him with different articles, with incense and with ghee and so many things. And Krishna, he wasn't even paying attention. He was enjoying his rasa dance. But they were becoming very distressed. And they were starting to cry, thinking that Krishna was not paying attention to them. He wasn't paying attention to their worship. So in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami explains a very interesting commentary on this pastime of Kaliya's serpent. He says that the Nagapatnis were crying because Krishna was not taking notice of their worship, and they were thinking that all their efforts to please and worship Krishna were for naught. They were not being accepted, and therefore there would not be any benefit, and their husband would simply be destroyed before their eyes. So they started crying for Krishna's attention. Because ultimately Krishna wants our tears. In the Krishna book, in chapter 21, I believe, Prabhupada explains that the culmination of Krishna consciousness can be perfected in crying for the Lord. Because in that chapter, chapter 21, Lord Krishna, description of Krishna's flute is there. It's called Venugita. And Prabhupada explains that when Krishna played his flute, all the cows and calves became very happy. And when the calves heard the sound, when the baby cows, the calves heard the sound of Krishna's flute, they were taking milk from their mother's udder, but they stopped taking the milk and they just stood in amazement. And they used their ears, the cups of their ears, for scooping up the sound of Krishna's flute. They were drinking the Jai Shishigornita. They were drinking the sound of Krishna's flute through the cups of their ears. And when the sound of Krishna's flute entered into their ear holes, it danced in the courtyard of their heart. And the reaction of those calves, when they came in contact with that Krishna consciousness, is that they started crying. Tears started trickling down the faces of the calves. And Prabhupada explains that this is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. He said Krishna consciousness can be culminated in the crying of tears for Krishna, as exemplified by the calves and cows of Vrindavan. So when the Nagapatnis were worshipping Krishna, he wasn't so much attracted or excited about their ghee lamp or their agarbati or their pushpa, but when they started crying and offering their prema ashru, their tears, then he took notice. And Sanatana Goswami explains, not only did he take notice, because they were offering their tears, when you're offering your tears, you're offering your very self, your heart. Your heart means you. So they're offering their heart, and that was coming out through the form of tears. So then Krishna said, all right, I accept. He took notice of them, and for a moment he stopped his rasa dancing, and he took from the Kaliya Nagas, the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliya, he took their top covering piece, their top cloth. It's called choli. He took the choli from all the wives of the Kaliya. And what did he do with that choli, that upper garment? He made a rope. He tied a rope. And then he put that rope through the nose of Kaliya, through the serpent. He put it through the nose, like you put a rope through the nose of the, or in the mouth of the horse. So he put a rope through the nose of Kaliya, and then he rode on Kaliya, using those cholis as his rope. He rode on Kaliya up and down the Jamuna, enjoying a wonderful horse ride. So this is described by Sanatana Goswami in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Then in another kalpa, because Krishna comes in every kalpa, every day of Brahma, Krishna comes, and he shows his pastimes, so his pastimes appear differently from different kalpas. So in this way he accepted. But he was never disturbed, as Lord Shiva's mentioning. By the touch of the Kaliya serpent wives, he was never disturbed. That touch means he was seeing them naked, but he was not disturbed. He was simply saying, thank you very much. You've given me a nice rope. I'll use this rope. Now I'll continue my pastimes and ride your husband a little more. I was dancing on his head for some hours. Now I'll ride around on his back like a horse. So in this way, Krishna engaged in his pastimes in Sri Vrindavan. And then, in the verse it says, so in this way, this glorifies Krishna being equipoised or dhira in all circumstances. He's never disturbed. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that this is the real definition of dhira. Dhira stata namuyati. We mentioned once before that one may say they're peaceful, but as soon as there's a cause for disturbance, he becomes very disturbed. So real peace means that one is transcendental. There can't be any peace in the mode of goodness. In the material world, if one arranges his lifestyle in such a way, by his diet, by his exercise, by his environment, he can arrange his life so he lives in the mode of goodness. He lives in the country, he's vegetarian foods, he does hatha yoga or meditation or whatever. And he can appear to be in the mode of goodness. But the mode of goodness is in the material energy. And from mode of goodness, one can fall to the mode of passion. So in the mode of goodness, you may exhibit the quality of being peaceful. But as soon as there is an agitation from your environment, or from your body, or from some other sector, you will become disturbed if you are only in material peace. You'll become disturbed and agitated, and you may do some violent activity due to passion or ignorance. So this is not real dhira. This is not being undisturbed. Being undisturbed, being dhira, can only happen if one is transcendental. There's no question of being dhira in the modes of nature. Because at any provocation, you can slide. You can slide down from your so-called goodness into passion. And it happens all the time. The most peaceful people, the most humble and meek and tolerant people, all of a sudden become mass killers or become crazy people. When they interview some people in the newspaper, they write about these crazy people in the West. Some, all of a sudden, they grab a machine gun and they go into the supermarket and they kill 50 people. Then the newspapers, they go and interview the mother. They say, "Well, why did your son do this?" "Well, I don't know. He was always so humble and so peaceful and so tolerant. He never hurt a flea. He never hurt a fly. I can't understand it. He was such a peaceful boy." So, he was so peaceful, but that was temporary, because as soon as there was some provocation, some agitation in his mind or his environment, somehow he lost his cool. He wasn't peaceful anymore, and he killed so many people. So this is material peace. Prabhupada would often say, there's no peace in the material world. And often when we travel in India, people will ask us, "Oh, you're following the spiritual path? Are you peaceful? Have you found peace? Does it give you peace?" And we say, "No. I've become so agitated. I'm so agitated and disturbed." "No, why? Why?" "Because I have no attraction for Krishna. I have no love for Krishna. This is causing me great anxiety. I can't be peaceful for a moment. I can never get a night's rest, a peaceful rest." So, this is what they think. Their conception of spiritual life is that, yes, I'm peaceful. I'm like a rock. I'm like a placid lake on a sunny day. I'm very peaceful. But actual peace requires Krishna consciousness. Because in Krishna consciousness, if one is absorbed in remembering Krishna, even in the most distressed conditions, he will never waver from his remembrance of Krishna. The primary example is our beloved Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada. Death is the most disturbing thing for anyone. When one's environment turns against one in such a way that he will die, one becomes very fearful, agitated, disturbed, and not the least bit dhira, or peaceful. So here, during World War II, they were bombing Calcutta. And Prabhupada, he was there in his house with his wife and family, and he was cooking some prasadam for Radha Govinda. He's cooking some bhoga, some puris and sabji, bhaji, vaigan bhaji, for his Radha Govinda. And the bombs started falling. The airplanes were dropping bombs to kill everyone and destroy everyone in the city. This is death. Very fearful, disturbing situation. Not a time to sit and say, "Shanti, shanti, shanti." There were no Indians running down the street. No Indians were sitting in their shop saying, "Shanti, shanti." They're all running to the shelter. They're all running to find some security, some protection from this onslaught of material nature. But Srila Prabhupada, he was not disturbed. He was really dhira. Because here was a cause for agitation. Here was a very big cause for disturbance. Death. Death will disturb anybody. Anyone will become disturbed by death. Prabhupada was not disturbed by inevitable death. The bombs were falling everywhere around. And as Prabhupada said in New York, "Chi-yao, chi-yao." Prabhupada, Satsuru Maharaj, he writes in the biography, he tries to write in words, the sound that Prabhupada made when he spoke that on the tape. It's very interesting how he used the different words. At any rate, Prabhupada was making the sound of the bombs as they're falling through the sky. They make a certain whistling sound. These, in the old days, they whistle as they go through the sky at high velocity. So Prabhupada was mimicking that sound. So the bombs are falling everywhere, and his wife was saying, come on, let's go, let's go. Go to the shelter for protection. And Prabhupada said, you go ahead. I have to finish my offering. I have to finish cooking this offering for Thakurji. Then after I go. And then Prabhupada, in his own words, he said, I saw the bombs were falling everywhere, and death was inevitable. But I thought, oh, Krishna's coming. Oh, Krishna's coming in this form as a bomb to take me. He's coming. Krishna's coming as death in the form of this bomb to take me back to his lotus feet. How wonderful. Hari Bol. So, this is Prabhupada. He was like this, totally peaceful and undisturbed because he's fully Krishna conscious. So this is the only position of peace, is to be fully Krishna conscious. So we'll stop there if there's any questions or comments. The question is that when Krishna was riding around Kali, it appeared that he not only defeated the demon, but he humiliated him by making a fool of him at the last moment. Actually, Krishna never humiliates anyone. We are the source of our own embarrassment and humiliation. But Lord Krishna, his merciful nature is such that he always likes to glorify his devotees. He always likes to honor them and take the best from them. The best from everyone is the service of Krishna. Whatever little spark of service is shining within our hearts, Krishna accepts that shining particle and he fans it into a great fire of pure love and service. So Kaliya, his wives were offering an opportunity to engage her husband in further service. So rather than being humiliated, he was greatly glorified because he became famous for all time as being the snake horse of Krishna. There's not too many snakes that got to become horses. But he became the snake horse and became a seahorse. Seahorse in the ocean. He's driving in the Yamuna River. So it's a glorification. When someone has the opportunity to engage in Krishna's service, we do not consider it humiliation. We consider it the proudest time of his life. The time of great honor. Oh, I was so honored. I was able to serve Krishna at one time in my life. So this is not a humiliation to be engaged in Krishna's service. It is a great honor. It's a great privilege that comes by the mercy of Guru. Oh, he's asking a difference between different attractions. They're just material attractions, material attraction. As long as we have no attraction to Krishna, we're forced to be attracted to Maya. Maya has unlimited forms, whether it's our spoon or our girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. Whatever form Maya takes for us, she has individual forms for each devotee or each person. But nevertheless, it's still Maya or illusion. So the solution to that is to increase and cultivate an attraction for Krishna. Because that capacity we have. We have the capacity to be attracted to Krishna. We have to cultivate it by hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, serving Krishna. So when we feel some attraction to some other object besides Krishna, then we should take shelter of Krishna. We should redirect. Attraction is the nature of the soul. The nature of a piece of iron filing is to be attracted to a magnet. Whenever a magnet comes near a piece of iron filing, the filing will jump to the magnet. So the nature of the soul is to be attracted. We're like a filing. So either we're attracted to the North Pole or the South Pole. Attraction must be there, or the magnet. So one end or the other. So we either attracted to Krishna or Maya. So we have to cultivate our attraction to Krishna. Rather than lamenting over some material object, start reading about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, and forget about that. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.